So good morning. My name is Carlos Avila. I'm a vegetable breeder at Texas A&M AgriLife Research. So I started my program 5 years ago, and what I want to do today is just give you a brief overview of what I have been doing on developing molecular and phenotyping selection tools for spinach breeding. So my research program is located in South Texas in the Rio Grande Valley, specifically in West Laco. So the target for breeding spinach variety is for Texas region, the Winter Garden area, and the lower Rio Grande Valley, where most of the spinach is growing in the state. As we have heard today several times, spinach is a dioecious plant. We have male and female plant with very low frequency of monoecious plant. That presents a big challenge, especially because that results in low breeding efficiency. So when I start my program, one of the things that I wanted to do is to improve how we can develop these new varieties. So essentially, I thought that I was going to follow two approaches, one using molecular breeding. And this is more feasible now because now we have next generation sequencing, we have a spinach reference genome, and we have large set of SNP available. At the same time, another way that I wanted to improve efficiency is by improving the way that we phenotype. Usually, we go to the field and take some notes, but this is very time consuming. Usually, we can go just a couple of times. We cannot monitor throughout the season. That's very time consuming and very difficult to do. And the other problem with current phenotyping is that it's highly variable. That means sometimes, for example, if we score for disease, my score may be different from another person. So it's very biased, depending on, on who is doing that. So what I want to do today is just give you two examples of two projects that I have been working on this area. The first one is on developing growth-associated molecular markers via high-throughput phenotyping in spinach. This was already accepted for publication in Plant Genome, so hopefully it's going to be, it's already online available. So if you want to know more details about it. So for high-throughput phenotyping, what we did was to screen 284 accessions. We replicated three times. This accession comes from the National Plant Germplasm System and also from some of our own accessions. So what we did is to use a drone. That was a Phantom 2 drone carrying a regular 12 megapixel RGB camera. So we took images from the field from starting, from germination all the way to senescence in order to model growth. From this picture, we were able to obtain several variables. I want to just point three that we were interested in order to validate this model. One was canopy cover. The other canopy volume and excess green index, because those are correlated with yield. So for each one of the variables and the pictures over time, so we built a model, plant growth model, and we estimated two variables. Okay. The one is the maximum growth for canopy cover, canopy volume, and excess green index, and also the days to maximum growth. So we use those as a phenotypic variables in order to develop molecular markers associated to plant growth. At the same time, we sequencing using double digested rat sequencing. We send it to sequence, and at the end, we were able to identify a little bit more than 6,000 SNPs to perform genome-wide association studies. So briefly, these are the summary of the results. We have the canopy cover, canopy, canopy volume, and excess green index, maximum values, and day after sowing. These are Manhattan plots. For those of you who are not familiar with Manhattan plots, each dot there represents one of the 6,000 SNPs. And the x-axis has the localization in the chromosome of the SNPs, and in the y-axis, the probability that the SNP is associated with the trait of interest. So the red line means the threshold after multiple testing correction. So SNPs above that threshold, we call them as significantly associated with the trait of interest. So in summary, we were able to obtain 99 SNPs. Also, most of the SNPs that we identified were from the day after sowing variable. We think that those variables are more robust in terms of identifying markers. And more important than that is that we think that now, using high-throughput phenotyping, because we know that, for example, diseases or plant stress affect plant growth, rather than doing a visual scoring, we can use plant growth in order to monitor how resistant or susceptible plants change in terms of plant growth. So currently, I am working on nitrogen use efficiency, disease resistance in white rose and anthracnose, and also bolting resistance. Wait, not yet. For the second, for the second part of the presentation, I want to show some of the effort that we are doing in order to improve how do we identify molecular markers. So Henry early presented one strategy, haplotype tagging, and another approach that we are using is allele mapping. So allele mapping is used very frequently in human studies. Essentially, what they do is to calculate the probability that a mutation is related to a human disease. It's very commonly used in human studies, but not very used in plant system. And I think that there is a good opportunity to use and be more informative in terms of identifying markers. So we use white rose as a model. White rose is the main disease that we have in Texas. And we screen 277 accession from the National Plant Germ Plant System and Texas A&M. We replicate it three times. And in order to score, we did a visual score. We used the rating published by Tatiello and co-authors in 1990. So essentially based on a percentage of infection. So we were able to identify several accessions that were highly resistant, highly susceptible. They fall, the distribution of the disease severity score were very normal. We estimated blobs. The important thing here is that usually when we do GWAS analysis, we focus on the whole population and the whole distribution. However, in real terms, we are more interested in the tails, so the most resistant plants and the most susceptible ones. So that's why we wanted to do allelic mapping in order to see if the frequency of the minor allele changed depending on the tails, most resistant and most susceptible. So we divided the distribution in four quartiles. The quartile one means the most resistant plant, and the quartile four, the most susceptible plants. So what we did was to test if a minor allele was more likely to be present in the resistant or susceptible plants by comparing the tail, the first quartile versus the fourth quartile. And as you can see, in gray is the susceptible accessions, and in white, the resistant one. The frequency of minor alleles is higher in the susceptible plant as compared to the resistant plant. This is very important because we can use that in order to select for resistant plants. And what we have here is that we subdivided the quartiles in 10% comparisons. If you see on the other side, if we just compare the interquartile range, meaning the accession in the middle of the population, we didn't observe any bias in terms of minor allele frequency in resistant or susceptible plants. So, of course, allelic mapping does not take account population structure, et cetera, kinship that is used in GWAS. So we wanted to compare how GWAS works in terms of identifying markers as compared to allelic mapping. So we performed GWAS at the same time. We were able to identify 170 accessions, as opposed to markers, as opposed to almost 450 in allelic mapping. From then, 101 went overlapped by two metals, and right now that's where we're going to concentrate, and the one that overlap, because GWAS gave us a better control of the population structure, but the allelic mapping within give us a very meaningful results in terms of details of the population. So we repeat the analysis doing a GWAS only using the tails. Of course, that increases the number of identified markers and the overlap markers. Finally, another very important aspect about doing minor allele mapping is that you know that all these models are based in biallelic models. So that means taking consideration the major allele, which is the most frequent allele in the population, and the minor allele, which is the second most common allele in the population. But this is very important because depending on the population size, the minor and major allele may change. So when we change the accession that we are selecting, we are changing the minor and major allele. So we compare the minor alleles identified by GWAS and minor allele identified by allelic mapping. I don't know if you can see very well, but in yellow are the ones that are commonly, the minor allele were common in allelic and GWAS. But few of them were not common. Maybe these are more significant in terms of those are more informative in terms that are going to be able to tell us the most resistant plant in comparison to the most susceptible plant. So when designing our primer for validation, we are going to use the minor alleles identified by allele mapping rather than GWAS. So in conclusion, susceptibility may be highly conditioned by the proportion of minor alleles. So upon validation, we can use that for selecting resistant plants. And I think that is very important to focus on the distribution tail, because at the end, that's what we wanted, the most resistant plant in order to be able to identify and then breed for resistance. With that, I would like to acknowledge all the people that contributed to this work, especially Henry Awika. He's a postdoc in my lab. He has performed all these analyses. My collaborators, especially also the funding source, Texas A&M, AgriLife Seed Grant, and the USDA NIFA CRI grant. And of course, our source of germplasm, the USDA National Plant Germplasm System, and University of Arkansas. With that, I will take any question that you may have.
Carlos, what's the situation with spinach production in the valley now? Is it increasing, decreasing, stable?
Well, most of the production in Texas is happening in the winter garden area, not where I am located. I'm located in the lower Rio Grande Valley. But in general, in Texas, it tend to be stable or a little bit low. So we have, for example, Del Monte Company that was working in there. They left, so they closed the facility. So maybe that is a challenge that we are going to have in the future.
Processing or fresh market?
For fresh market, for baby leaf. But usually producer, what they do is they give one or two cuts for baby leaf, and then sometimes if the quality is not good, they let it grow for canning. Yes.
Hi, you were talking about high throughput phenotyping for
Yeah. So the question is, how do we are going to do the screening using high throughput phenotyping just on aerial images? So normally, what people have attempted is just try to distinguish resistant and susceptible lines just based in color. But as you say, sometimes it may be very difficult because the symptoms are on the in the lower leaf side of the leaves. So what we wanted to do, rather than just a screen based on color, we want to measure plant growth rate. And we know that disease for sure is going to slow down or have a significant effect on growth rate. So rather than in color, we can monitor growth rate and then be able to differentiate between resistant and susceptible plants. So that's the main idea that we have.
You think the same method can be used in down mildew?
For high throughput?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think we are using not only for disease, but also abiotic stresses. We are doing in tomato for water use efficiency. Also, we are going to be working on salinity. So essentially, all those stresses we know that are going to affect plant growth. So there are different variables that we can measure. Right now, we just focus on two of them, the maximum growth and the days to maximum growth. But we can also estimate, for example, the slope, growth rate slope, that we can use as a scoring method to differentiate between resistant and susceptible plants. Yes.
I wonder, do the measurements by drone get affected by winds?
Well, this is a very interesting. One of the things is if it's too windy, we don't fly because we may lose the equipment. So that's one of the things. The other thing is it's not just one picture from the air. It's a mosaic picture. So it's taking around 400, 500. And we overlap those pictures. So we have a 3D image from the field every time. So each one of the pictures that I show you is not just a single 2D picture. It's a overlap mosaic picture that give you not only 2D, but also plant height.
Okay. The drones are pretty stable these days.
Yeah, another thing that we are doing is, for example, the shade may affect, so we try to fly during noon because we don't want to have the effect of the shade. One of the thing is in South Texas we have very strong winds sometimes, so that's why we prefer not to risk it. Right now, for the work that I presented, we use just a regular Phantom 2 with a regular RGB camera. So that's not that expensive, but we have other equipment with the multispectral sensors that is very expensive, so that we don't want to risk it.
Yes.